A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on October 12, 2003, entitled, For the Joy of It All. The texts for the sermon are 1 Chronicles 29, verses 10 through 13 and 20 through 22, and 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 4. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
I remember it was like yesterday. We had gathered in an assembled task force to deal with the fact that this place wasn't doing very well financially. And no one has ever accused me of being a good fundraiser. Fundraiser, yes, but fundraiser, no. And so some of the responsible leadership knew that something had to happen, and we gathered together and around a table and did some brainstorming. And in the midst of all of that, someone said, maybe we should have a party. That someone is sitting right there. That was you, Sue Pettinga. You said we should have a party. And I jumped on that idea because I said, I think that's one way that I could do stewardship. We should have a party. And we did. I remember the first service when those balloons floated through the air. Cindy Anderson will tell you she went to school that next day, and the children that were here told the people at school that they had had balloons at church. And it was so different than anything we'd ever experienced before. But there was such an outpouring of joy. The children were so delighted. And I think perhaps it was because it was such a contrast to our high church liturgy that we simply enjoyed being together in that kind of a party mode around a very good cause. And so we had such a good time that year that we even thought for a while maybe we ought to have four party Sundays a year. And we did that for a while. But eventually, we came down to having this party Sunday, and more lately, we have added that harvest dimension, and that's where we are today, and already again today, just looking into your faces, I am confirmed that that is the way. To set forth a serious intention, Don Hoekstra has already said to you, that this is no small undertaking. It would be a piece of cake for a congregation where all of the old techniques were still in place, where we could talk about guilt and heavy responsibility, where I could stand before you and said, the Lord has led me, and God says, and God demands, and God requires. I could cast that all in that old framework in which I grew up, in which I was trained, in which I began my ministry. It was that, this is serious business. This is God's business. And on occasion, the preacher would say, the Lord spoke to me in a dream last night, or as I was meditating on this, I was led of the Lord to tell you. And of course, there was always that note of heavy obligation. Sometimes it was laced with a bit of threat. And on occasion, when the people didn't respond adequately, there was a kind of a scolding tone. Now, if you've been in church all your life, as I have, you know what I'm talking about. For some reason, I never really felt very comfortable with that, particularly when I came back in 71 and this place started to break out all over. And we had a theme. We were going to build a team to build a program for the healing of people. And very self-consciously, we said, and we're not going to worry about brick and mortar. So we went from one service to two services, and then from two services to three services. And at that time, I would tell the people, the first service, if you come, it's rehearsal. The second service, it's finesse. The third service, fatigue. But eventually, we had to think about building this place. I was in fear and trembling because we were already stretched to the limit. We were already doing deficit financing. Someone convinced me that if you invested enough, even though you went into debt, eventually, you know, you would come to the point where you could pay that off and prosper. Well, and then to think about building something like this, I can still remember it because I see in the newspaper a church here, a congregation there, going into programs of $2, $3, $4, $5 million, and then I know it's time to retire. I just get so weary. I couldn't even think of that. If I was half the leader I should be, that courtyard would be covered and we'd be able to flow right out of this sanctuary, right into that wonderful courtyard, you know, with glass on top. And we haven't planned for it, by the way. Maybe we should get started. But seriously, I was always troubled with the fact that preachers like me could so glibly say, God obviously is leading us thus and so. Because I knew, as the preacher, that there was a lot of my will and a lot of my ambition tied up with that. And it just always bothered me a bit. It was a bit presumptuous for my plan and my program to be sold as the will of God. And that tension I lived with. And consequently, I never did this kind of thing very well. And I'm being serious now, because I did live with that kind of tension. And yet nothing happens without a vision. But when I think about that, then I realize, well, we've not been a people without a vision. In those little boxes around the place, there are little brochures which are way out of date. And there's one of them, of which there are not many examples anymore, but this little brochure, Dreaming the Future, this ought to be reprinted, because it's a roadmap. Starting in 1971, a statement that we printed on our liturgies at that time, a nice quote from the Catholic theologian Hans Küng, who talks about a conception of the church that was new and fresh and was the expression of an emerging grace that this community was beginning to embody. And then, there's another document out of 1980. And then there is the one we print now on the back of our liturgies from 93. And finally on the back, there's a panel about from 1995 when we celebrated 125 years. It takes you, you can read the early stuff, read the language. You'll see some of the old language. And then you'll see some of the old conceptions begun to be challenged. And finally, you'll see what we have now, which we print on everything that we send out. And, you know, it's really time to add another panel to this. But as I looked at that, I thought, we've always had a vision. And of course, vision doesn't spring out of a vacuum. Someone has to lead and be the catalyst for that. And for better or for worse, that's been my role over these years. David had a vision of a temple. And David brought that vision, and the people responded. They embraced the vision. And when they embraced the vision, there was such excitement of the vision realized that it was pure joy. And they had a party and they celebrated just for the joy of it all. Because when you do see something, and when you do embrace something and do get caught up in something, you get released from yourself and in your own small world, and you become a part of something that's grander, something that's wonderful, something that elicits the best in the human spirit. And that has marked us. Paul, as I said, had a vision of Jew and Gentile in one body in Christ. And he traveled the ancient world. He experienced all kinds of trouble and affliction and suffering. But it was that vision that drove him. And he said to the Gentile congregations, You know, if you give me an offering, there are people suffering in Jerusalem, those Jewish Jesus people who are poor. And they did. They did it with joy out of their own poverty as a sign of a new kind of community. And I think that has been what has marked us. And it will continue to mark us. As Cindy said, this is not the end. It is the beginning of a grand new beginning. Last week, Don Hoekstra told us how he was accosted in a hardware store by someone who said, Where are you now? And he said, Christ Community. And he said, why would you be in a place like that? They don't believe anything, they don't have any creeds, they don't have any, everybody's his own authority and so forth. And I want to say to such a person, don't believe anything? Dear God, we believe something. We believe in a community. We believe in the creation of human community. Now, I suppose in a lot of congregations that sounds rather pale, but I'll stand by it and I'm more convinced of it all the time. We believe in the creation of human community because we believe that God is within us and God is among us. And it is in the experience of community that we have the touch of grace, the sense of the sacred and the holy. I was at Duba's table last Tuesday. Duncan Littlefair has celebrated his 91st birthday on the same day that Nancy celebrated hers. But he's had a tough summer. He's had some medical problems. But we got back to Duba's Tuesday. And he sat at the table and he spoke about the darkness of pain, of coming up to the very edge, and then coming back to experience the wonder and the awe of the ordinary, of a tree turning its leaves, of his pet dog, and of that table in which the five of us lifted our glasses to the wonder, miracle, joy, and glory of life. And I tell you, it's a holy moment. And here, when we gather week after week, or in small groups, or one-to-one, and we meet each other, we meet each other in honesty and authenticity, soul connecting to soul. That's the experience of the holy and the sacred and of God. I just read a book by a fine scholar, Elaine Pagels. Elaine Pagels, Princeton. Done a lot of work on the Gospels, other Gospels that didn't make the cut. And this is a book beyond belief. And her first chapter is from the Feast of Agape to the Nicene Creed. And she says, one bright Sunday morning in February, shivering in a t-shirt and running shorts, I stepped into the vaulted stone vestibule of a church in New York City. For a long time, I was startled by my response to the worship in progress. The soaring harmonies of the choir, singing with the congregation, the priest offering the prayers and so forth. And she says the reason that she stopped in is she was cold after her run. She left with her husband and her year and a half old child still asleep. She had tossed and turned all night because the day before they had heard that year and a half old son had a rare lung disease that would last for 6 months or a year, who knew, but it was fatal. And in that troubled time, running as she was, she ducked into the church and stood in the back and she experienced something of that transcendent mystery. She said, standing in the back of the church, I recognized uncomfortably that I needed to be there. Here was a place to weep without imposing tears upon a child. And here was a heterogeneous community that had gathered to sing, to celebrate, to acknowledge common needs, and to deal with what we cannot control or imagine. Yet the celebration in progress spoke of hope. Perhaps that was what made the presence of death bearable. Before that time, I could only ward off what I had heard and felt the day before. I returned often to that church, not looking for faith, but because in the presence of that worship and that people gathered there, in a smaller group that met on weekdays in the church basement for mutual encouragement, my defenses fell away, exposing storms of grief and hope. In that church, I gathered new energy and resolved over and over to face whatever awaited us constructively as possible. When the people would say to me, "Your faith must be of great help to you," I would wonder, what do they mean? What is faith? Certainly not simple assent to a set of beliefs that worshipers in church recited every week. We believe in one God, the Father, Almighty, Maker of heaven and earth. Traditional statements that sounded strange to me, likely like barely intelligible signals from the surface heard at the bottom of the sea. Such statements seemed to me then to have little to do with whatever transactions we were making with one another and ourselves, and so it was said, with invisible beings. I was acutely aware that we met there, driven by need and desire, yet sometimes I dared hope that such communion has a potential to transform us. The chapter is entitled From the Feast of Agape to the Nicene Creed. The Feast of Agape, that was where that early community gathered together and they broke bread together and they loved each other and they embraced each other. And she said, that's what happened to the church. It went from the Feast of Love to the Nicene Creed. I believe in one God, bub, 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 bub. I believe that we are about creating human community. We do not worship some God out there, some supernatural being, some heavy policeman holding a stick of morality, hemming us in, caging us up. We are a human community, and it is in our human relationship, the God within us and the God among us. We come here to weep and to laugh and to embrace and to hope. We come here to question and to quest. We come here to care for each other and to love each other. It is the community, dear friends. It is the community, the human community. And it's the human community in which I know the sacred and I experience the touch of God. And when that gets through to me, why, what can I do but have a part?